all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. You've probably never thought about the military use of pigeons to communicate, but that was a common practice during World War I in particular. So I had the chance to write on that, and then I was asked to speak on a podcast called All About Pigeons. So here's my explanation to the pigeon community about the use of those majestic birds in the military to communicate between the front and headquarters.
Hello, and welcome to the All About Pigeons podcast. We have a very special episode for you today, so stick around. Welcome to the All About Pigeons podcast. Today we have with us Jim Fossone. He is the lead on Veterans Radio podcast. He is a veterans disability lawyer and served in the late 1970s. He's been on air with the Veterans Radio since 2014. He has built Legal Help for Veterans, PLLC, into one of the premier veteran disability firms in the country. Jim has also written a book on Share Me and pigeons who have served in the war. And we're going to talk about that today. So, Jim, thanks for coming on and talking with us.
Well, Philip, glad to be here. And with my many things I do in the veteran space, I'm a veteran myself. And as you mentioned, a veterans disability lawyer with Legal Help for Veterans. That got us involved in Veterans Radio, which has been on the air for 21 years and doing podcasts for about six of them now. So every week we publish something new at veteransradio.org. And along the way, I started writing about issues interesting that I thought were interesting to veterans. And many of them are found at a website called homeofheroes.com, which has all kinds of stories on Medal of Honor recipients and Silver Star recipients and other things I found interesting. And one of them was the story of Share Me. So as time goes on, you start accumulating more and more information. And you say, well, I didn't know that. I got to push something out about that. And that's how we got here.
Okay. Yeah, it is definitely a lot of people, I feel like, are just completely unaware about the role that pigeons served in wartime. I mean, just completely unaware about it.
It's really, when you say it out loud, it becomes really simple because military maneuvers are all about communication. It's about what headquarters wants you to do and what the guy in the field can actually get done. And oftentimes those aren't the same things because the headquarters doesn't have the right information. So you need a way to communicate between the front line and back where the troops are headquartered, where those generals are, if you will. And so you have to have communication. And we live in an age where you and I are doing this over the internet, where everything's digital and technology-wise, but you don't have to go very far back. Before there were cell phones, before there was internet, before there was GPS. And now you get yourself into, well, how did they communicate? How did the forces know what to do and what they were facing? And really, pigeons have been involved in military affairs at least as far back as 1878, and were involved in the U.S. Army Signal Corps. I think they got out of it about March of 1957, but a long history and valiant service by pigeons to allow communications at the very highest and most impressive levels.
Absolutely. I had a my uncle J.R. Williams was in the Pigeon Signal Corps in World War II, and there were some pretty, you know, really neat articles about that and how they did the training and things like this. And really, I think like Cher Ami is probably the most, for the people who do know, she's the most well-known. Well, first off, I guess you wrote the book on this. And when I hear the story, I hear it said both ways. Do you know if Cher Ami was a hen or a cockbird?
I have heard primarily that it was a he.
Okay. We'll just say that then.
We'll say that Cher Ami passed in 1918. So it's a long time ago. Any way you look at it, nobody was around who really knows the truth. Maybe the Smithsonian does, because that's where Cher Ami resides.
That's right, yeah. So she's still there. She's all taxidermied up in at the Smithsonian, right?
Absolutely. And she's one of a number. I think there's three other or four others that were so significant in their military service. They have the same honor.
Let's get into the meat and potatoes on this. Can you give us a breakdown of the story of Cher Ami?
Yeah, and again, you got to think back to World War One, where there were no cellular communications. The Americans were over in France, fighting in France, and to communicate, you had to string copper wire between the frontline troops and headquarters. So it was easy to disrupt communications by cutting the wires, which both sides did to each other. Also, World War One was a trench warfare. So a lot of the troops, you know, dug trenches and were fighting from below ground. So again, not a great way to be able to communicate. You couldn't use signals, you couldn't use lights. There were no real radio communications at that point in time. The general in charge of that French expeditionary force for the U.S. was General John Pershing, Black Jack Pershing. Great name for a general. Black Jack Pershing got to France and he realized, my troops are out there, and he was a guy who wanted to be at the front of the troops. But he said, I can't communicate with them. He actually did two things. One of them's, both of them are very interesting. One of them's relevant to this conversation. He had 800 pigeons brought over by the Signal Corps to France because he knew that they would be successful in flying their routes and communicating. The other thing he should do that should be mentioned in passing, at least, he made a call to French-speaking American women, single women, who were working for AT&T. And he brought them over, I think around 500, something like 2,000 volunteered, but about 500 came over to France and worked as telephone operators on the front lines, because they were faster and better than the Army soldiers who were trying to connect calls between headquarters and connecting with the French troops and the folks in the trenches. These women were somewhat known as hello girls, have a whole interesting history themselves. But the pigeons really got used by Pershing to send out with the frontline troops so that if there was no wire communications, which in many places there weren't, you could release the pigeons with messages back to headquarters, and Pershing's command could get the latest intel of where artillery was needed, where troops needed to be strengthened, that sort of thing. And what's really amazing is the claim that 90% of those missions flown by the pigeons for Blackjack Pershing were successful. The message got through.
That's a good percent. That's very effective.
I don't know about you, but my cell phone doesn't work that often. So Cher Ami, who I think was born in the fall of 1918, made his or her way to France. She flew 12 missions, came back from France wounded. She had received injury to her eye, her leg, and had taken a graze in the breast from a bullet, because both sides knew the others were using pigeons to communicate, And so shooting them down was fair game. She came back to the United States, ultimately passed away in June of 1919. If you think about it, didn't have a very long life, but in those 12 missions, 12 successful missions, because you know you don't come back unless it's a successful mission, really contributed to the war effort. And there's one, really the last famous battle that she was instrumental in that, if you'd like it, I'd be willing to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of like her her glory story right there.
It really is. There was a lost battalion. And again, if any of your listeners are interested, you know, they can Google lost battalion World War One, and all kinds of stories will pop up. And what had happened is in this trench warfare, some American troops dug in at the side of a hill, were really surrounded by the Germans and couldn't find a way out. The headquarters wasn't exactly sure where they were at, pulled in artillery fire onto where they thought they were at this hill. The only problem is it was inaccurate. Without good information, the artillerymen can't do their jobs right. Ultimately, the major who was involved, Major Whitsley, used his last pigeon, Cheremie, wrote a quick and simple note, attached it to her leg and sent her off. The note was, and so this is really interesting because it's so abbreviated, right? So the note was simply, we are along the road parallel to 276.4. Our own artillery is dropping a barrage directly on us. For heaven's sake, stop it. That was the note. And made its way back to artillery. They adjusted their sights and ultimately pounded the Germans enough to free up the lost battalion. But all of that couldn't have happened without this, you know, if you will, scrawny little bird.
Yeah.
Communicating back to headquarters what was so critical, so important, which was coordinates. Where are you? We're trying to help. It's, you know, they certainly didn't want friendly fire to occur. So it became really a life-saving mission that Cheremie had, and ultimately the lost battalion was no longer lost. As a result, Cheremie received the French Croix de Bleu, one of its highest awards in military terms. It also received medals for bravery. It was the British, I believe, gave it a Dickin medal, which is for gallantry under fire. So there was a real recognition of the immense value played by this little bird in its efforts to let the artillery folks, you know where the lost battalion was.
And how many soldiers were in that battalion? Do you remember? I think the number was, it was a decent amount of men too.
I think there were less, they may have started at 500. They were under 200 at the time that it occurred. And that's, I mean, they were getting wiped out, and they would have been wiped out.
Wow.
That's not the only pigeon that there's a real history for during World War I. Some of the names are somewhat famous. I don't have the details on all of their missions. But there's a pigeon known as Mocker, M-O-C-K-E-R, who lost an eye and is noted in the literature. Another one called President Wilson, who lost a foot. G.I. Joe, famous one that helped troops in Italy and saved a town where the United States Air Force, Army Air at the time, was going to bomb this Italian town because it thought the Germans still had control, and it was a pigeon that flew back the information that the Germans had left, thereby saving the town and saving the civilians from this, what would have been a horrific bombing raid. To give you an example of how it was used both ways, there's a famous World War I German pigeon, which we in the United States call Kaiser. At the end of the war, Kaiser and nine of his mates were captured, brought back to the United States, and actually toured the United States as pigeon POWs.
Oh, wow.
As a way to raise, I'm sure, bond money for the United States Army.
Yeah.
And Kaiser had pretty good POW life. He lasted 31 years, died in 1949.
Wow.
During that time, he sired 75 pigeons that the Army Signal Corps put to use, primarily in World War II.
That's incredible, 31 years.
And as I said, I think the Signal Corps took pretty good care of him. And he turned out to be probably the longest POW pigeon ever held. So,
wow.
I thought that was pretty interesting. And I said earlier that Cherami is in the Smithsonian, but so is Kaiser and a couple of other pigeons by the name of Global Girl and Anzio Boy, who played different roles in World War II. Anzio Boy, as you might imagine, flew missions in Italy. So it's there's a long history of this, and you don't have to go too far back to see the importance of pigeons in communications in wartime efforts.
I got younger kids, so we've got some of the, I think the G.I. Joe is one of the kids' books we have, and there's a kid's book on Cherami, and there's also a lot of like YouTube animations. So anybody with kids or teachers out there for other kids, you know, there's some pretty good places where you can watch these stories also.
One of the things that is so interesting, and you're kind of keeping it alive with All About Pigeons podcast, is this whole idea of how intelligent homing pigeons are, how capable they are. Now, us over on the Veterans Radio side, we think it's an interesting story, but we don't know, we don't appreciate maybe the level at which the training went on, the breeding went on, because the Army sold off its last pigeons in March of 1957.
Yeah.
So it's a long time since the Army would have utilized homing pigeons.
And that, to me, I mean, I'd like to hear your thoughts, because we've heard about the Army in China, that they've actually been going the other way. They bought like 4,000 breeders a couple of years ago, which means they probably got 8,000 pigeons today. You know, it's, they're still doing it. I think France still has a pigeon corps. I mean, what are your thoughts about that, Jim? I mean, what do you think about us getting rid of that?
It's interesting you raise this, because as I was getting prepped for this show, Philip, and thinking about this more, it turned from a curiosity to a national security issue.
Right.
If you think about, and I didn't know what China was doing, that even makes me more concerned. But if you think about, and we've certainly had programs on EMPs, weapons, if you think about cyber attacks, you knock down our satellites, you knock out our GPS, you knock down our communications, we're going to be right back to where we need the pigeons.
Yeah.
You know, we are so dependent on the electronics today. You cut our underwater cables for internet, and we're blocked off from countries on the west and on the east coast, right? So yeah, I would think it's worth at least thinking about, should there be some specialty in understanding how this can be a tool for the military, which has a long history of using animals successfully in warfare, whether it's horses or dogs. The dogs in Afghanistan and Iraq are well known.
Right.
Dolphins. You know, maybe it would be prudent to think about coming back around to this, and particularly if China's doing it, there might be a reason why China's doing it. Cutting communications to Taiwan, for example. But it also takes a community like yours that are breeders and racers of pigeons to step up and say, hey, I can help.
Yeah.
In a world where the U.S. military is all about, it's a volunteer corps, very few of us know somebody or are involved with somebody who's actually participating in keeping the peace around the world. And I'm sure if that time came, the pigeon community would come forward.
Yeah, I wish that we still had something, one loft, you know, just give us one loft out there and just to play with it. There was still, I think it was in, I'm probably going to get the country wrong, in India or something, that was actually still doing a optional delivery service using pigeons. And there's some company here in the States that will deliver letters. It's kind of like a short distance sort of a thing, just kind of a novelty thing. But I still think, you know, they're always, they've been a part of, you know, human existence for thousands of years. They're not just going to get irrelevant because we have smartphones now. And to put all of our
trust and faith into that. You know, I think that would be really helpful. And I don't know how true this is, but have you ever come across anything where the, because like you said, both countries where everybody uses pigeons during the war, were there any countries that were using falconry at all to take down the pigeons? I mean, short of just shooting at them?
I'm not aware of the falconry use. The British had a lot of pigeons involved in the war effort in World War II in particular. And you can imagine the ability to fly back across the channel. And something like 32 British pigeons received the Dickin Medal for gallantry under fire. So that gives you some sense of the level of effort that was being used by the British. But I'm not aware of falconry. I'm aware of, as I say, it was fair game to shoot at them. And actually, in World War II, there was a Army technical memo, which I, in looking at it, thought was kind of comical, but serious, on how to release pigeons from aircraft.
Oh.
That was sort of interesting. I do know that they were often strapped in cage to paratroopers who would jump out of airplanes, and then when, you know, got them down on the ground, that's how they would get them there. But they were also apparently released from the aircraft, which I find sort of interesting. But they also didn't fly at the same speeds, and they weren't jets sucking in everything either. So, you know, at one time, this was a real serious endeavor by the U.S. Army Signal Corps.
I heard a story too about it was a ship that was going down, and it was when the pigeon came back, they did the triangulation based on how fast the pigeon can fly when it got there, and they were able to find the boat, whereas otherwise, you know, the ocean's so vast that it just would have been hard to even find the sailors out there.
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, again, those are the kind of stories and those are the sorts of creative efforts that the Army and the Navy would have used with trying to have communications and recognizing, hey, pigeons are our best way to communicate in the world at that time.
You know, during the Allied effort, is it true that a lot of, like you're saying, that there was horses and dogs and pigeons? So when the war was over, did those animals get left behind? Obviously, Cher Ami came back probably because of the status of her and everything else, but did the other ones just get left back there?
Many were left behind. That's one of the real efforts that they tried to make out of Afghanistan, is to bring the search and rescue dogs back somewhat successfully. History will tell us over time how successfully. When you watch history unfold, you don't really get the full truth. You get the sanitized version. But we've had a number of stories on veteransradio.org where dog handlers have told their stories about how difficult it was to get them to clear their dog back to the United States. A dog named Fred that was not a qualified service dog was smuggled back into the United States with some hoodwinking of DHL carriers to get it out of Afghanistan and Germany and ultimately to the United States. It's a great dog story, but it just shows you the love and the commitment and connection soldiers have to these animals, such as these pigeons, who have helped them, who have shared risks with them, who have been injured like they may have been injured. I told you earlier about, you know, lost eyes and legs and shot in the breast and all of that. I mean, those are all things with men in combat would really relate to and have strong attachments to as a result.
Oh, yeah. And the reason they were getting left was it was a quarantine situation, right? They just didn't want to bring back a bunch of animals in case one of them had something.
Absolutely, it is. It's a concern for the safety of other animals and people back in the United States, all with good merit and measure. This is an interesting little slice of avian history, a little interesting slice of veteran history, and it's great that we can kind of connect the two.
Yeah.
People may get motivated to go do some of their own research on some of these issues, so they understand the long, proud history that raising and racing pigeons has.
Absolutely. And so people can find the book on Share Me that you wrote at homeofheroes.com.
Right.
They can listen to the your guys' podcast on veteransradio.org. I found you guys on Spotify as well. So if you just search Veterans Radio.
We're like you. We're on all the major platforms at this
Excellent.
Point. We've been doing this so long. So we're glad to have new listeners and always glad to have new ideas about stories that may be of interest to veterans and their friends.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this has been a great one. And Jim, thanks for coming on and talking with us and enlightening everybody a little bit here.
Well, Philip, I'm glad you reached out. It's been fun, and keep doing all the good work you're doing, spreading the word about these all important pigeons.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the All About Pigeons podcast. Please help the pigeon hobby by telling your fellow club members or other pigeon friends about the podcast, and make sure to take some time and leave a good review for the podcast wherever you do listen. If you have a topic or a person you want to hear more about on the podcast, just send an email over to allaboutpigeonspodcast@gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Presscorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.